Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to Popping Perfectionism. We are doing something new. And we want you to see our beautiful faces.
Just kidding. We're doing a face reveal. You guys have seen our faces. If they follow us on Instagram.
That's true.
You guys have seen our faces.
We wanted to provide like video content.
Yeah.
Just to see us. It communicates more like emotion, more. Mm-hmm. What am I trying to
more content?
More connection.
Just connection
like
also.
Seeing our faces. Yeah. And it's kind of fun to be able to like look at a camera and imagine me talking to an audience too.
Yes.
Because we love you guys. It's and part true. Of podcasting is like, we don't see you.
You know? I mean, I guess we're not seeing you right now either, but.
Right.
I don't know.
At least you're seeing us now.
Yeah. And for the people who are still tuning in via Spotify or Apple Podcasts,
We still love you. And we will have these on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then we'll also be putting clips on our Instagram page. So feel free to share it or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, happy to be back. Happy to be trying this whole thing out.
Yes.
Funny story, we had an amazing episode recorded for you guys.
It was so
where
good.
We practiced so much vulnerability and connectionism.
Yeah.
Because we just like, we've talked about how Anna and I have been in rock bottom quite a bit in
on
terms of mental health and everything, actually.
The last year and a half.
Yeah. It's just been a lot of ups and downs. So we decided to just open up and talk about how perfectionism has like screwed us over.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we've had a lot of issues with the audio.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
And that's happened to us a lot, but this was like really bad.
Like it was, because before it's happened, we're like, it's good enough. They can tell what we're saying. This time it was like her mic was basically not working. Yeah. Like you couldn't even hear what you were saying really. And then it would flip to mine and then you couldn't hear what I was saying.
Yeah.
It was unusable.
It was unusable. So we've decided to re-record it and still share all of our vulnerable thoughts with everyone and practice connectionism.
It'll just be a little less raw. Because when we originally recorded this, we'll get more into this, but we were in it. We were like in it.
We were actually like crying together the day before we recorded.
Like I don't think you guys understand. Yeah. Like it wasn't like we were just hanging out and then we just ended up crying. I was on the phone with Alicia crying. Mm-hmm. She was crying. And then I said, I think I was like, I don't think I want to be alone right now. And you're like, you can come over and cry. So I went to Alicia's for the purpose of crying together.
Yes, so we didn't have to be alone.
Yeah, it was a hard time.
It was a really hard time. And Anna and I have shared how we experience vulnerability very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I'm sorry, that's not what I meant. Like our,
I agreed immediately, even though that's like, not what you meant. I'm like, whatever you're saying, yes.
No, how we experience perfectionism differently.
Yes.
And also just our life struggles and life paths have been so different.
Wildly different.
But what we were feeling in that moment was perfectionism stabbing us in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just both in such different situations going through different struggles, but yet we were both feeling the same thing. We all experience perfectionism and struggles differently. Part of connectionism is that they all have something in common at the root of it.
Yeah.
And your struggle could be so different from someone else, but just opening up and talking about it together really bonds you a lot, even though it could be over like quote-unquote failed relationships or no relationships and like a marriage and a current relationship, but things are still really hard.
And I think there's a really nice, an even deeper level of connectionism that comes when that bonding comes over things you've done wrong. Not even just things that have happened to you, right? Which that also, because, right, perfectionism wants us to paint a perfect life, right? Essentially. Yeah. So it's not only just addressing that our lives aren't perfect because things are happening to us. It's also in those moments where it's like, my life isn't perfect because I was dumb or like I was selfish or I was whatever.
Right.
And the other person being like, oh yeah, I've been that too. Like, that's even a deeper layer, I think, that hurts more, but also fosters even more intimate connection.
Mm-hmm.
That perfectionism never wants you to breach.
Yes.
Doesn't want you to touch that.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts. Yeah.
And as perfectionists too, it's obviously so much easier to say like something else is flawed and something else is causing me all these mm-hmm. problems and all of these struggles. But when it comes from you and your life and how like actions you've decided to take or choices you've made that have made your life hard, then it's a lot harder because you are the problem, which perfectionism is terrified of.
Yes, yes.
And one choice that Anna and I have both been making is to try and shield ourselves from judgment, from shame, from whatever it might be by being perfectionists and by mm-hmm. trying to carry on this perfect front that ultimately fails us. Because it's exhausting to try and be perfect all the time.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to share specifics around those things that are causing us pain and grief and things that we have been hiding from, which is scary for a perfectionist to address. So something else Anna and I have said is like, we're not sure if it's just something everyone is going through in their mid-20s, mid to late 20s, or even just early 20s when it's like...
We're getting to late 20s.
Yeah, we're getting to late 20s. We're inching our way. 26 now. But I don't know if it's like a figuring out who you are in adulthood or figuring out mm-hmm. your life after college, because it's a lot of big transitions.
Yeah.
And especially for people who love school, it's a lot. So mm-hmm. I don't know if all of you in your mid to late 20s relate to this. I don't know if it's in the planets that are messing up everyone, which I know some of y'all don't believe, but I believe it.
I believe, like, to an if extent. We want to, like, address this quickly.
Yeah.
I just think it's really naive for us to think that we are so important and impenetrable that these ginormous celestial things floating around us don't have a single effect on us.
I know.
The moon controls the tides of the ocean.
I know.
And we think that the planets aren't doing anything to us.
Right. And we're like, right? What percent are we water? 70%?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Like, our body consists of a ton of water.
Yeah.
And the planets and the moon affect the tides of the ocean. And you don't think it affects you?
Yeah, girl. And, like, to what extent? I don't know. I just think there's something. I just think it has something to do with something.
So it's either A, the planets, 2, B, being in your mid to late 20s, or 3, just being a perfectionist.
Or 4, the patriarchy. Just kidding.
Which we will shamelessly blame everything
on. Just kidding. It's those three. Okay, it's those three.
Yeah, so essentially, I'll summarize the conversation Anna and I had over the phone. And you can feel free to, like, jump in.
Okay.
Scene. I am driving home from, like, the gym or something. Anna mm-hmm. calls me.
Mm-hmm.
We both just end up in tears.
I'm sitting in my... I'm parked in front of my apartment, not getting out of my car, crying.
Yeah.
I don't know where you were.
Yeah, I was just driving home, and then I pulled into my house. And we were both just in our cars. And essentially, like, it was a 30-minute, maybe more, conversation that... Basically, it just ended on, like, I don't want to die. Like, I'm not there yet in terms of despair and sadness.
Yeah.
But the way I'm living, like, if this is the way I'm living, like, I don't want to do this way of living anymore.
Yes.
Like, something is not working.
Yes.
And I am, like, something has to change right now.
I remember this isn't sustainable. One of us said, I can't remember which one of us, but one of us said, the thought of living like this for the rest of my life is unbearable.
Yes.
And that's exactly where we were at, where mm-hmm. where whether you said or I said it, that's how I felt remember. Where mm-hmm. I was like genuinely thinking about living how I'm living right now for the next 60, 70, whatever years was like excruciating. Like, I just couldn't. It was just so heavy. And I was like, I can't. Like, I can't. Something has to give. I don't know what, but it's like, I just can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so, and I think I still am in that way a little bit. But I'm definitely more in, like, the hopeful and, like, action phase about it, where it's, mm-hmm. like, I can do something about it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what to pinpoint, but here are, like, 4 things I can do that will help me in some way, you know?
Yeah.
But then in that moment, it was literally, like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm freaking out here.
Yeah,
like,
which, when we were in that moment, was when we recorded this episode originally.
Yes.
So you're getting a much more hopeful outlook on the situation. Because we recorded this originally before we got to that place where I feel like we both are kind of now in that, like,
yeah,
still sucks, but we can fix it maybe,
mm-hmm.
can change a little bit maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, a big part of it is like the new year. I love the new year I like love setting goals. I love evaluating goals. It just, I love new beginnings, all of that. So I think that gave me a lot of
mm-hmm.
hope. Yeah. A new wind. Yeah. I don't know what it was.
Yeah. Mine, I read Leadership and Self-Deception again, which I've read a few times. And for some reason that helped me. If you've read it and if you haven't, it talks about how like you can be in the box mentally towards other people. Mm-hmm. And I found that I was doing that a lot. And so then that helped me kind of like pivot that thinking a little bit. And then I got back on track spiritually, which whatever you believe, believe it. Because our professor, mm-hmm. Paul Parkin, who mm-hmm. we are obsessed with, he always talked about how you had spiritual needs that you need to be addressing, whether it's religious or not. Like every person can and should be spiritually aligned.
Yeah.
And I was very spiritually misaligned. I still am for the most part, but like I'm like getting back. So I think taking those steps also helped me too.
Oh yeah.
Like praying and all that jazz, like helped me like
meditating
ground a little bit. Meditating. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I think it's also like a mental health train where there's always ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we were just in a really low. And I just share that because I think one way perfectionism has failed me is I'm like a, I wouldn't say I push through with toxic positivity, but kind of. Like I've always been a very positive person, had a very positive outlook on life. And I just like push through things with positivity.
Yeah.
But I can't, that doesn't work always. That's
not sustainable.
No.
Yeah.
And especially as like, as we get older and face, like you face problems that just get deeper and deeper and deeper. Cause in high mm-hmm. school, it's like, oh, this person was mean to me. Or, oh, like I lost a soccer game or I failed a test. And in that moment, like that's really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you like get into new chapters of life, these are like increasingly harder. It's like progressing in a video game.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're on the boss level constantly.
Yeah.
And that you can't just like push through that with positivity.
Yeah.
So that is where perfectionism has definitely failed me. But we want to just share a little bit in like, just give you a peek into how we've gotten where we are, or like the struggles that we have been wrestling or mm-hmm. dealing with.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first? Or you
want to go? Oh, I can go first if you want.
Go for it.
I think it's also important to address that we're sharing this to open the space for commiseration, I guess, if that makes mm-hmm. sense, right? Especially if you guys have been like listening for a while, like we want you guys to like see even more, because we've been very selective about what pieces of our lives you get a look into. Yeah. I know that we in the first season went over like our stories, right? Mm-hmm. Where we kind of gave some background, but we didn't go like super into detail, and we're not gonna like overload you with detail right now, but we're just hoping that this opens space for you guys to be more vulnerable, whether with us on our socials, if you want to DM us, or with your people in your life, whatever it is. We just want, this is us making the first move.
Yeah.
So balls in your court. Yeah, exactly.
We're just trying to be better connectionists too, because like I know at least for myself, historically, I hide a lot of things that are really hard in mm-hmm. my life. And I hide a lot of my personal problems because mm-hmm. I don't want to appear as like weak, or I don't know what. Maybe I should dig into that. I'm like writes down to talk to Joe. I'm like,
Joe. By the way, we have the same therapist.
Yeah, we have the same therapist.
He's amazing. We love him. Okay,
but we love to hide those things that aren't shiny. So we're just trying to,
and then
practice what we preach.
A lot of perfectionism, the root of it is to ask, why do you feel the need to hide the things that aren't shiny? Because there's other people mm-hmm. who I don't think like not everyone. I think everyone, just because of how our world works, suffers from a bit of perfectionism.
Yeah.
Right? You can't be on social media and not, right?
No.
But there's other people who somehow just like do it better. Like they're not afraid of people seeing them like mm-hmm. when they're not shiny or whatever. So I think that's an important part of perfectionism is like, why do I feel the need to cover this up or like hide this or whatever?
Yes.
So I was raised in Morgan, Utah. Shout out to Motown. It's a very small town, northern Utah. A lot of people don't even know where it is, and even fewer people have like been to it. And because it's such a small town, everyone there knows each other. And well, at least when I was living there, it is the highest density per capita of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like
Motown.
So like literally of the like, I don't know how many people lived there. There were 200 people in my graduating class, so whatever that equates to.
That's tiny.
I know. So like whatever that equates to for the town size, it was like a couple thousand maybe, I don't know. But literally like I think 3 people at our high school were not members, and it was just like and everyone knew, like it was just very dense. And with that, my dad was in different parts of growing up, my bishop in the stake presidency and was the seminary principal, not just even a teacher, the principal.
I didn't even know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. So like, and my dad has scrupulosity, which is religious OCD. Mm-hmm. So he took everything with religion and just took it to the next level, basically, and raised us to do that. And I think there were some good parts to that. I think there were some really harmful, damaging parts to that. And that's a piece of my life I've had to navigate as I've gotten older, and which things I'm okay to let go of and be a little more loose on, which things I want to hold on to. Anyway, with all of that, my family, with my dad's positions and the town, really grew up under like a microscope. Like everyone knew our family. Everything we did immediately reflected back to my dad. Like, so it was a lot of pressure. And then my dad had scrupulosity. My mom had really bad undiagnosed anxiety and depression. My dad, again, was a teacher. So we were super broke. Six kids and, like, not a lot of money. Like, so it just was, like, I grew up in a very loving environment. I would say, like, a loving home. And my parents truly did the best that they could. But I grew up in a very stressful home all the time. Like, you know, we were poor enough that like my parents would time our showers to make sure we didn't go over like the water limit because it cost money. And like we would, just stuff like that. Like we just were like very like not well off financially. And then my dad was very, he's a lot better now. And so was my mom. They've been to therapy, but he would just stonewall a lot where he would just shut off emotionally. He would like be in the house, but we wouldn't see him for like ever. We were like, is dad home? Like we just didn't know. So like emotionally that was rough. And then my mom was a big people pleaser. So like it was just all these things, and everyone has their stuff right with families. But
yeah, I want to say that too, because sometimes people feel bad, like acknowledging the hard parts of their families. And it's not like, it's not talking trash on your family unless you're saying like my dad was a terrible dad and blah, 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 which if that's true, like that's fine. Like share your story. But your childhood has affected everyone's childhood has affected them deeply, deeply. And there's an Instagram page called The Holistic Psychologist, and she talks a lot about childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And my mom, for example, her parents are deaf. Both of them are deaf. So they experienced a ton of discrimination.
Yeah.
And my mom was the oldest child. So she was parentified in a lot of ways because she was hearing. And so she was a translator for them by the time she could speak.
Oof.
So she remembers being like a child and going to doctor's appointments with her parents. And like
having to
translate for her mom and dad. But she's had a hard time saying my parents parentified me, because she doesn't want to talk bad about her parents because she has always had to protect them, like constantly had to protect them. So anyway, like I just appreciate you opening up about your childhood, because I think a lot of people struggle to do that because they want to protect their family, or they're like, oh, but my childhood really wasn't that bad. It's like, yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah
like you had food and you had clothes and your parents didn't like physically abuse you or things like that, but it can still be hard and leave a big imprint on you in some way.
Okay, so grew up in that environment, had a perfect older brother, which played into it, where I just constantly felt like I wasn't good enough. And then every time I got even the slightest rejection, because you know this, when you are raised in a household where your parents have ranging emotions and you don't know if one's going to either blow up or stonewall or whatever, you become highly sensitive and highly aware to people around you.
Because highly sensitive people.
Because that's how you survived, right? Yeah. So your brain wires itself to be very acutely aware of this. So then I was acutely aware to any rejection from anyone, like anything like that. So I feel like every kid experiences that. But for me, I feel like it was, and not unique to me, there's other people like this, but it was a little more heightened than other people, where even the smallest rejection just was like a knife wound. Like I couldn't emotionally handle it. So I learned very quickly to not let anyone see any part of me that might be
Something
they couldn't like. So raised in Morgan, went to UVU, loved it there, killed it. I had a great time at UVU. I was super involved. I graduated summa cum laude in the honors program. I was the president of the university's first student intern. I then was the interim communications director for the entire university right after I'd graduated. Like I just loved it. Super involved. I knew a ton of people on campus. Like, it was just the time of my life. But Alicia and I actually were talking about, because we've talked about how there's, like, an old version of us we want to get back to. We, like, have both said that before. And it was easy when I was going to UVU to like myself, which sometimes I didn't. But because it's so achievement based. Mm-hmm. Right? You want validation? Then go do take a quiz. You get 10 out of 10. You're smart. You know, like it's immediate gratification, immediate validation. So I felt really good about myself in that way. But intermixed with all of this stuff, I started actually dating after high school. Because again, my family was so religious, I didn't date in high school. I'd go on dates, but I couldn't go on single dates. I could only go on double dates. And I could not be physical with anyone. So I did not hold anyone's hand or cuddle with anyone until I was like 19.
Shut up.
Yeah. You're
kidding.
No, seriously. And then when I did, the first time I held the guy's hand, I was driving home on the freeway. And I remember I drove home with my window rolled down because I felt so sick and nauseous about what I'd done that I thought I was going to throw up.
Oh, because my I held gosh. His hand. You're kidding.
No, I'm serious.
Wait, how old were you when you had your first kiss?
21, baby.
No.
Yeah. Because, and that was not, I say that and I'm worried, I shouldn't worry about this, but I do. Yeah. I worry that people are like, oh, it's because no one wanted to kiss her. It was by choice. I had opportunity. And I just,
I don't
like,
think anyone's doing it.
I don't know. So, yeah. So first kiss was 21. And then since then, I just have had a very sad string of situationships, as one calls them, mm-hmm. that most of them, if not all of them, because I wouldn't get in a situationship unless I wanted it to be something more. I wanted it to be something more and it never turned out to be, which that is a very simplistic way to describe a lot of trauma for me that I won't get into, but like a lot of hard times, a lot of guys who, you know, did me dirty. And,
I also just think like one thing that you've mentioned to me a lot that's been hard about the situationships is you feel that like guys get to know you and they like you and they get to know you more and more, but then they get to know too much and then they don't like you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
right.
True.
Like
yes,
that's something that you, and I don't want to like put words in your mouth, but that's something that you had said in the last episode that like,
oh,
that
when we'd like recorded before.
Yeah. Because even when I met Anna in school, I remember saying like, what class did we have together first? Was it group communication?
Group, small group.
Yeah. So we had a class together about small group communication.
Yeah.
And Anna like, a little bit undersold, I think, how much UVU meant to you and as a student, and like you were just your peak self up to this point.
Yeah.
Because you were an incredible student. Like all of the teachers loved you. You were well known across campus. Everyone knew who Anna Tibbetts was, right? Like that's how it felt.
I mean, yeah.
It felt like your kingdom.
Yeah.
And when I met Anna in a small group class, I was like, oh, she's the intern for the president of UVU and da da da. She's like so smart, blah, 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 blah. And like, I also had a hard time connecting with you a little bit because you were very closed off.
Yes.
Right?
Guilty. Well, yeah, because what we just talked about, all growing up, I was shown that if I let people in, some people will leave me, and I could not emotionally handle that, mm-hmm. which that's another part of perfectionism we've talked about, where you have to be comfortable being abandoned because people are just going to leave you. So, yeah, totally. Yeah, and it was that whole thing where it seemed like guys seemed to care about me and like me to a certain point.
Yeah.
And it always seemed to be this threshold where once they hit that mark, they were no longer interested. So obviously that happening again and again, I was like, there's something intrinsically wrong with me.
Right.
So then perfectionism came in, you know, double as hard and is like, well, let's fix it.
Well, because too, the parts that you got comfortable showing everyone, they loved. Because it's like, oh, Anna's so smart. She's so athletic. She's so funny. Mm-hmm. She's blah, 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 blah. So then when you start to show like new parts of yourself to people or get to know people in a different way and they seem to reject you, it's like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, it's like I'm not perfect.
So it, the parts I didn't rehearse are not lovable.
Yeah, yeah. Not wanted.
Not wanted. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I will just keep the parts that I have perfected.
And I also want to add like highly sensitive people and perfectionists take rejection very personally.
Mm-hmm.
They take almost everything pretty personally. That's me. I'm
no,
speaking
I do
for
that
myself.
Too. No, yeah. I do it every day.
You do? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I take things really, really personally because typically rejection like isn't that personal because it's like, did you really like them that much too?
If
like,
you're secure, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, not that you're insecure, but if you're secure in your like attachment or like you said, mm-hmm, your awareness or your sensitivity, then it's not. So I had this like string of situationships and then I finally got a boyfriend. And I don't think, I've just never been able to really articulate to people what that meant to me, that I finally got into a relationship. Like, mm-hmm. years, literally years of just wanting a relationship, wanting to be a girlfriend, wanting all the relationship things, whatever. And I know I'm not alone with this. Like, I know there's tons of people, mm-hmm. who've wanted relationships and haven't had them. and just getting so close and then not having it. So I finally got in a relationship and it was with this guy and there were blaring red flags that I very actively ignored for the sake of getting into a relationship, which I've never done before. So I really did like him enough. Like, I wasn't just jumping into something, because if I'd wanted a boyfriend before this, I could have had one, right?
Yeah.
It's just I wanted it to be someone I liked. I really did like him. Anyway, come to find out there were some incompatibilities. That relationship
totally normal
lasted 10 days and then I broke up with him. So I got my like fantasy relationship for a week and a half. And then I broke up with him. It was really hard. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. Alicia was a homie during the whole thing. I took it very hard, but it's okay.
Which is expected.
We're 6 months out now and we're doing good. But anyway, so that like really shook me up. And now it's like, I feel like all of this has come to a head where it's like, I'm not a student anymore. I'm not achieving stuff every day. I don't know what the heck I'm doing with my life. Like, I don't find a lot of meaning or a lot of purpose in anything. Like, and then it's also like, oh, I finally got in a relationship and it super sucked. And so I didn't even have like that. Like, I feel like that was always something I was like, oh, when I'm in a relationship, mm-hmm. or like destination happiness.
Yep.
I was like, when I'm in a relationship, it'll be really great. Got in a relationship, it sucked. So I was like, okay, I don't even have that to look forward to.
Because so far too, like in your life, you had checked all the boxes really with like spiritually, you had been like mm-hmm. totally spiritually solid. So mm-hmm. it's like check.
Yeah.
You know, you had freaking scrupulosity growing up and grew up in that environment. Yeah. So probably like 10 checks.
Yeah.
Then school, like you achieved so much. You were so smart. You had great jobs, excellent opportunities. So it's like check, 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 right? Mm-hmm. So the only thing that wasn't checked was a relationship. And you mm-hmm. like finally had that and it was like not what you wanted or not what you expected.
Yeah. So yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
That is, we love checking
very boxes. Accurate. We love check boxes. Yeah. Which perfectionism loves checking boxes. And with that, I also got a job at Crumble Cookies. I am still there. I'm on the PR team and I manage their partnerships. And I had gotten very close. If it wasn't, I think this might have been the catalyst for the breakdown.
It was. Yeah. So the day Anna calls me.
Yeah.
It was like
a my breakdown. Boss pulls me into her office and we have like a one-on-one. And I make some comment where I was like, yeah, I know I've been really disorganized with my time. And another team that I work with is probably feeling the fallout from that. And I feel bad about it. And she's like, speaking of that, I'd like to address some things with you. And I was like, okay. And she was like, I've received feedback from multiple teams at Crumble that you're difficult to work with. You make everyone's jobs harder. They're really frustrated with you. You have burned relationships. You've tarnished your reputation, all this jazz. And honestly, like, I would have rather been told that I am the worst employee Crumble has ever hired than to hear them say that I'm making other people's lives difficult. Mm-hmm. For sure. So to hear that in multiple layers, in multiple different ways, literally crushed me. I could not handle it. I was crying, like, in my meeting with her. I was like, a disaster. I called Alicia sobbing and was crying so much and just so unraveled that I had to go cry with you. Like, mm-hmm. it just felt like this accumulation again of everything that like wasn't sustainable about how I was living my life had now bled its way into enough parts of my life where it's like, okay, this is affecting my work now. Like, this is affecting who I am as a person now, my reputation, like my character. And I literally just lost it. Like, I just couldn't handle it.
Totally. And I think like that was so hard to hear because perfectionists love to keep our dark sides and our breakdowns off stage.
Yes.
It's like, okay, I guess I can have weaknesses if I'm going to allow myself to have any and insecurities and problems. Yeah. But as long as no one else sees, we're okay. We're good.
Or if they see them and we somehow flip it to be redeeming. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But to have them inconvenience other people or for other people to say, like, you're difficult is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
And also, I remember just going back to the conversation, like, what was so hard for you is that at UVU, no one ever would have told you that.
No,
as,
never.
As, like, a student or even as an employee.
Yeah.
You were, like, the best. Of the best is how you felt.
I was a bit of a golden child at UVU. Yeah. Yeah.
And so to have, like, your work ethic or your interpersonal skills be failing you, it's like, this has never happened before.
Yeah, or be like brought into question. Yeah, mm-hmm. totally. Because even again, growing up, I was the perfect kid, right? We were the perfect family. We had everything together. So like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And one thing we have used to describe perfectionism a lot is like stage makeup and being on stage, because mm-hmm. perfectionism is very performative and it's like, duh, mm-hmm. but all the time, because people can't tell that you're human. And yeah. so on the phone, we ended up talking about this analogy with being someone on stage, like an actor on stage. And when you're on stage for so long and the bright lights are burning you, your makeup starts to melt off and you're mm-hmm. sweating and there's no breaks. So you start to like slip out of character, or people realize your cracks or realize your faults.
Because your voice starts getting hoarse.
Yeah, your voice starts getting hoarse. Like you are going to slip because you can't be on stage all the time. Mm-hmm. And that is where perfectionism has started to fail you and I.
Yes.
It's like, okay, so we're 26 now and it's been working so far.
Fine, yeah.
But now it's like, oh, my makeup is melting off and I look like a hot mess.
Yes. And like, and I think there's something to be said where it's like you can be on stage sometimes. Like it's not wrong to like be on stage, right? No. And perform, obviously.
There's a time and place for it too.
Yes. But people who take breaks are able to confront within themselves that they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, like they take breaks and they then sit down with themselves and be like, oh, this is what I really look like, or this is what's really going on with me. Perfectionists, we don't even let ourselves go off stage. Like we don't even let ourselves look behind the scenes because it's too scary. Like it's too
much
unconfrontable, right? Yeah, it's mm-hmm. too much, because perfectionism doesn't allow any flaw or any acknowledgement of flaw. So to even admit that you might be failing somewhere or inadequate somewhere, like that's not even... You don't take yeah. breaks. So yeah, exactly what you're saying.
And I will say too, like if an actor or someone were to go off stage, not only could they give themselves a break, but say like, okay, this is where I probably fell short on stage. I could have done this and this better. And mm-hmm. I really liked that I did X, Y, and Z. But if you're on stage all the time, there's no room for like evaluation. There's no room for improvement. And probably for you at work, like work started to get really overwhelming for you.
Yeah.
And yeah. But you didn't like allow yourself to get off stage at any point. So how can you even perform that long?
Yeah.
So exactly. then like not only at home are you unhappy, but at work you're unhappy, and everywhere it's just like, I'm tired and I need a break. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point our bodies, like our physical bodies, just gave up.
Yeah.
Also when you're like yeah. when we hit this wall of what do we want to call it? When
the great wall.
When we hit the great wall
of despair.
It's just like, I know, speaking for myself, my body like literally stopped.
Yeah.
Like just, I was so freaking tired. I was so hungry. I had headaches constantly. Mm. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. I felt like I derailed a little bit.
No, that was great. That was literally perfect. Because like with that, with the stage makeup, like I suddenly lost control of how people were perceiving me. Mm-hmm. I had lost mm-hmm. control of this image I was trying to portray to everyone in my life, not just at work, but like everything.
Right.
And it was just very clear that it was failing me. And perfectionism has failed us before.
Yes.
But it's never been like this. Like it's never been this never drastic.
Like stabbed me in the back and like betrayed me.
It's
like
never
this.
Gutted me like a fish
yeah.
before. But like it really, there's just been small moments, but this really, like I've never felt... I've had breakdowns.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh,
I've
yeah.
had plenty. This one was different. This one was like major. So I actually said something in the last episode that I don't super remember saying, but Alicia took note
masterful.
Of it. Too kind. Alicia took note of it and I really liked it. And I really resonated, obviously, because I said it. So I'm going to read it just from my phone here. What you're hearing right now, like with what's happened with me, and what you're about to hear with what's happened with Alicia, what you're seeing is the fallout of perfectionism. This is what it looks like when perfectionism fails you, and really fails you. It's having to come to terms with a you that you don't know, because the real you was too dark, too shameful, too scary. And when that breaks, you're left with a you that has been the dark and is now having a spotlight shown on it, and it just burns. Because that was something, that was the real thing. That was like the crux, I feel, of both of us. And correct me if you're wrong. Where I just, so many times I said to you, where I was like, I don't know who I am.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know who I am. I have no idea who I am. And that's so scary mm-hmm. to like not know who you are. Because all of this time, sure, I've been me, but I've been these curated, angled, shiny versions of me.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally. And now it's a version that, like, people are, like, you've never heard someone give you the feedback that you're difficult to work with
in my life. That never.
You're making everyone's life harder, and that never. So you're like, this is not me. This is not who I am.
Yes.
Like, what?
Like, it's, what's wrong?
It literally is like, I don't know who you are talking about, and I have to live with that person day in, day out. And where do I go? What do I do? What am I doing? That's how.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
What led me to my fallout is something very, very similar to Anna that had me just question, like, my entire identity. I was just like, who am I? Like, this isn't the me I feel like I used to be. Is this a new me? Am I gonna get back to the old me? Like, what is happening? Before we go on to me, did you have anything else to add with your experience?
I was actually just looking at the notes right now to make sure I didn't forget anything.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the biggest indicators to me that something was really wrong, like super wrong, was I studied a lot on playfulness in college. And how important it is to relationships. And it actually is, they talk about your basic needs being like food, water, shelter, and love. food, yeah, shelter, water, all those things. And they found in multiple studies that playfulness actually carries just as much weight as those things. And they did this study with a bunch of lab rats where, in a very, very condensed version, basically they had two rats in different cages. One of them had things for the rats to play with. The other one didn't. And then they had two taps of water in each cage. Well, one tap in each cage that was laced with crack cocaine. Actually, I don't know if you can lace water with crack cocaine. I don't know the different kinds of cocaine.
We don't know anything about drugs.
It was laced with some kind of drug. Whatever you can lace into water. I don't know. Anyway, and the cage with the rats that didn't have anything to play with drank the drug stuff and got addicted and died, and the ones with all the things that they can play with did not. And I think that translates to us, not because we've been addicted to drugs, but we are addicted to controlling how people see us. We are addicted to shielding ourselves from being vulnerable. And because they had play in their life, they didn't get on the drugs. And I think that also plays a big part into playfulness. It's very, when you're really truly playing and you're really like passionate about something and interested in something, it is very hard to be playful and worry about what you're looking like at the same time.
Yeah.
And so that was something I noticed where I was like, I don't play anymore. Like, whatever that looks like. Like, I've gotten to like a very like robotic routine lifestyle where like I'm just not playing anymore, and I didn't want to play. And I was like, that is a huge like red alarm to me.
Yeah.
That like I'm not wanting that right now.
And I think another form of playfulness in adults is like just having interest in different hobbies, like
yes,
and being interested in, like, I know Anna, like you like love writing and you enjoy running, and there's like things that you like doing, but it's like I don't even like that anymore. Like I don't even like that right now.
Like I don't even want to do it.
And I know those are some of the symptoms of depression.
Tis
where you lose interest in things that used to bring you joy and happiness. But that's also just a sign that, like, oh, you know, you're not doing so hot.
Yeah.
And that's literally where we were at. Like, any of the things we like doing, we didn't like doing anymore.
And depression is literally a side effect of perfectionism.
Yes.
For real. So, like, it probably was depression. I mean, I've been diagnosed with depression, so.
Me too.
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted to share that part.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I literally have depression. It comes in waves, obviously, but perfectionism was a huge contributor to that. Okay, I have talked about myself for a very long time.
I loved it.
But that is that's where I was at. I am just a little bit sad still that you didn't get to hear that when we were like at the depths of sorrow. It was so raw.
But you know what? Like, it's going to come in waves again, of course. And this isn't the only time perfectionism is going to fail us.
Don't you worry. We'll get sad again.
We'll just continue to share.
Yeah.
And it'll come back.
Yes, like, yes, yes, yes.
For me, how I got to this point, like, basically, the past, like, 3 years of my life have been... No, I would say four.
Yeah.
The past, like, 4 years of my life have been so hard. I rewind 4 years. I was in, like, a lonely marriage. And I was doing a lot in school as well. Like, I was super involved at UVU.
Yeah.
And I was a research assistant. I was planning on attending graduate school. So I was studying for the GRE. Like, I just had so much going on. and marriage wasn't so hot. That's okay. I was just pushing through it. And then it gets to my senior year and I have this internship. It's awesome. I take the GRE. I get into grad schools. But then, like, just kidding, my marriage falls apart. And I had kind of like foreseen that coming, but I wasn't totally sure. And it just literally one day changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's like I'm starting my very last semester of school. I now know I'm going to get divorced. So I like move back home with my family, which is hard. I'm trying to graduate, which is hard. I have this awesome internship, which is a lot of pressure.
But and also a big deal, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And I was working with one of the most impressive people in the world. Kyle mm-hmm. Reyes is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a blessing to me. But like, I had so much on my plate. I was literally living day to day. And I told Anna, like, I would schedule in time to cry.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have time to just yeah. cry all day. If I could, I would have. But in my planner, I would write, okay, wake up at this time. I have a meeting at this time. I have class. Then I can have 10 minutes of crying. Then I have to jump in another meeting and I just like, I have to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I was truly, truly, truly living day by day until I was graduated. And before I knew it, I was like actually living at my parents' house. Like
mm-hmm.
that last semester I had moved out and Anna helped me move my things out of my apartment with my ex-husband.
It was so hard.
And it was so hard. It was so painful. And like, it was just so much. And I think that's also why I struggle having a lot of memories of that time, because I was just a robot.
Like, I think you just couldn't handle it. Like, I think your brain just yeah. like couldn't handle what was happening.
Yeah. So yeah. I was just survival mode.
Yeah.
So then I graduate and then spur of the moment, go to Hawaii just on a vacation, which had been planned. But then I end up staying there, like staying in Hawaii for 2 months. And then I come home and I get hired by the Jazz, which was mm-hmm. awesome. I got hired by the Utah Jazz. I had made some connections there. Then I move from my family's house back out. So I'm living on my own. I have roommates. I start dating again, which was really weird because I'm like a new person. I'm a yeah. divorced person. I feel like I don't even know who I am. Like, I just had learned a lot about myself. So I start dating. Surprise, get a boyfriend. And then I move back home. Like, there was just so much going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing that started it all for me was when I got fired. And I don't know if I've even, I don't think I told them the story.
I don't think so. And it's really, I will just say this. We both, I feel like, laugh at it.
Oh, yeah.
Laugh at it
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
but
we're good.
In the moment, it was horrible.
Oh, it was genuinely yeah. traumatic for me.
Yeah. Yeah,
so yeah. I worked at the Jazz, right? And they were going through a rebrand. So people who follow the Jazz know that, but they basically changed like all of their branding from the gradient jerseys and whatever it was before to a whole new thing.
Which, can I just say, this just adds again to the list of impressive things about Alicia. Her first job, no, like your first job after graduating was with the Utah Jazz. Like,
thank you.
Just yeah. to keep painting this picture for you guys of how our entire lives have mm-hmm, been mm-hmm. built around this idea that we are impressive. We achieve. People see us and we're doing cool things.
Yeah.
And also she's amazing. Duh. But
thank you. So the Jazz was going through a rebrand and obviously you sign like a contract that you aren't going to disclose certain information when you work for an organization. Like Anna can't
An NDA.
Just, yes, an yes, NDA contract. An NDA.
Yep.
You can't like expose things that the public don't know.
Yeah.
Of course, right? So we're going through this rebrand and you all know now that the Jazz are like black and yellow, which I knew, and I knew that couldn't be told to anyone. But what I didn't know is that they were bringing back the Mountain Edition purple jerseys. So I was at the arena with my teammates. The rebrand was coming out in 2 days and they were laying down the floor and B-Real came on. And all of you know what B-Real is now. But hopefully, at the time... Yeah. It was small. I had like 30 friends on B-Real.
I think you had like 10.
Yeah.
Legit. I think you had like 10.
Yeah. It was tiny.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, oh, I took a picture at the arena of the floor and then a couple of friends with me. But then like 2 minutes go by and I'm like, oh my gosh. I go to one of my coworkers. I'm like, dude, is that part of the rebrand? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, so minor thing, I kind of posted it on B-Real. And he was like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. So immediately I try and figure out how to delete it, but it was so hard to delete a B-Real back then.
Oh, it was so hard to do anything on B-Real back then.
It wasn't easy. Yeah, yeah, it was so difficult. So it took me about 15 minutes to get it deleted, maybe less.
Yeah, not a lot of time.
But in that time period, one of my friends had screenshotted it and sent it out. So within 45 minutes of the post even being up, that my B-reel was on the Jazz Nation Instagram. It was on Twitter. People were talking about it.
It was trending. It was
a big deal. And someone even sent this to me. I think one of my friends sent me the post on Instagram and they were like, hey, do you know if this is real or not? Because they know I work at the Jazz. And I'm like, ah.
And it was literally your post.
Yeah, it was bad. Like, oof. I was so nauseous. I was so stressed. I was so stressed. And my teammates were like, hey, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Long story short, it was not okay. I was let go like the next day.
Well, I remember you were like, the day of, you were panicking texting me, and I was like, and you're like, my boss wants to meet with me or something, and I was like, dude, don't worry, what are they gonna do, fire you?
Yeah,
I
literally like said it'll be that. A slap on the wrist.
Yeah, I was like, what are they gonna do, fire you? And then you texted me like an hour later and you're like, they fired me, period. And I was like, oh,
she's like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
But what was so hard is that, first of all, it was like so sudden, and like, mm-hmm. it was something that was so against me as a person. Like, I'm not someone who would intentionally leak something. Like, I'm not rebellious like that. I would never want to displease my bosses like that. Like, mm-hmm. in school, I was such a teacher's pet. And, like, I would never do that.
Yeah.
And at the Jazz, like, I worked with awesome people, like, big people, too, that had connections all over Utah.
Yeah.
And, like, people that I wanted to impress, because perfectionists love impressing people. And what sort of impression is that?
Mm-hmm.
Now I was the girl that got fired because I leaked the rebrand on Be Real. Like, that was me. Like, it was so devastating to me.
And I feel like it was, correct me if I'm wrong, similar to when I was like to my boss, I was like, I don't even recognize the person you're talking about.
Yes.
For you to be like, your character to be questioned.
Yes.
Where you're like, I don't even recognize this
yes.
person.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. My character was like, obviously put into question.
Yeah.
And like, the president of the Jazz was like, she's a goner. Like, that is so bad.
That's so painful
for me. Yeah. And it's particularly painful for someone that's a perfectionist because, like, it's all about the image. And
it's personal.
And it's very personal.
So personal,
and
yeah.
That job was already difficult for me because it was my first full-time job coming out of school. So that's a transition. And, like, I just got divorced, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I signed divorce papers the day that I started my job.
Oh, goodness. And like, you weren't there for super long.
No, I was there for a year.
You were at the Jazz for a year?
Yeah.
What the?
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, I thought you were there for like 6 months.
No, I was there for a year.
Dang it.
But, bad friend. No, not at all. But it was already like such a difficult situation, and I was already trying so hard to maintain an image while my offstage self was struggling. Like, mm-hmm. my backstage Alicia was trying to figure out who the crap she was already.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to maintain this image of who I know I am inside, like a hard worker, someone who can get things done, who has good ideas, who blah, 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 blah. And then I got fired. And it was like, I'm trying so hard to maintain this and it's not working.
Yeah.
And it was one mistake. Like, and obviously, like, I'm also not blaming the Jazz. I get it. It's fine. We're cool. Like,
she's over it.
Yeah, it's okay. And, like, I get the position they were in because I obviously, like, violated a contract. But it was just so embarrassing. Like, how embarrassing. And I go home and tell my family. And it's funny because even if I'm with my brothers now and friends or people are like, oh, so what are you up to now? Are you still at the Jazz? And I'm like, no, so I left the Jazz. And my brother just, like, laughs.
Because he knows.
Like, and what am I supposed to say? Like, oh, they actually fired
I got
me.
Fired.
To like everyone? No, yeah. I'm not doing that. I'm obviously doing that now on a podcast. But anyway, it was so difficult. And I had just been through so much. But when I got fired, it literally put me into rock bottom.
Yeah.
And then when I got fired, like, I had wanted to start my business, like start a business managing vacation rentals. It's something I had wanted to do. It's something I had planned on doing. I was figuring out an exit strategy at the Jazz because mm-hmm. I wanted to start doing this, but it was just forced upon me, not on my terms. I didn't have control, mm-hmm. which was hard.
Yep.
And so then I'm just like at home living with my parents, depressed. And I was trying to start a business, but I like couldn't do it. I would try and like wake up every day, but it was the hardest task ever. And the days just got like harder and harder and harder. Mm-hmm. And eventually I decided to see a psychiatrist because I was just having so many problems. And I always knew I had like ADD or ADHD, but I never got it figured out. But then when I had to try starting a business, like you have to have motivation. Like you have to be able to get stuff done because no one else is there.
No one's coming to save you.
No one's coming to be like, hey, did you do that thing? Or did you finish this? Like you have to do it. And so I noticed like finishing any task was near impossible for me. Like it was so hard. So I go to a psychiatrist. I'm like, this is fine. I'm just going to get some Adderall. I'll be good.
Get that Addy.
Yeah. And then she was like, so you have major depressive disorder and PTSD and ADHD. And I was like, cool. I just start crying because once again, that's not like me. Alicia depressed? No. Mm-hmm. Like everyone in my life has always described me as like sunshine and happiness and joy. And I can like light up a room. I'm not depressed. Like that can't be me. Like who are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to deny it in every single way. It's just repeated things of like, this is not like me.
Yeah.
But that like, well, here you are. So obviously it is you. Like is this just a you don't know? And I think that's exactly what it was because like I've probably always had depression, but just can push through it in certain ways.
Yeah. And it was a you that your perfectionism never let you meet.
Never. Yeah. No, never.
Because it can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And something the psychiatrist told me as well is that like when you go through a traumatic experience, it can literally alter your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people that can like worsen symptoms of existing anxiety or ADHD or depression, which it probably did do for me. But ultimately it was a good thing because it got me to some like help. It got me to help. So I got on antidepressants and whatnot. And then I was like, oh, I can wake up. Like people can just get out of bed. Like, can you guys just get out of bed? Like for me, like it's literally the hardest task of the day. And I want to sleep away my life because mm-hmm. I was like so unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so huge help going to the doctor.
Yeah, totally. I think like similar to what I had said, you talked about in the last episode how like spiritually that played a big part for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think we both resonated on this idea that we'd like let God down. Right?
Yeah.
And that, like, we'd let our past selves down.
Yes. This is another thing. Because something else I was also struggling with is, like, now I'm in a romantic relationship, right? And I have a boyfriend. But, like, I am still figuring out who I am as a human. Mm-hmm. Like, who I am as a person. And I'm going through so many things that are challenging my identity. So, who am I? And then, who am I supposed to be with you? Like, who am I supposed to be with my, like, romantic partner? Like, this is so hard. And so that was another thing on my plate and is like it is another thing on my plate is just figuring that out and figuring out like trauma responses, figuring out triggers, figuring out like who I am on top of all of these things. And like spiritually, I also had made decisions that are like historically contrary to what I would do. And as I started making choices that were contrary to like former Alicia, it just further distanced myself from like who I was before.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, I felt like I had abandoned God.
Mm, yeah.
And yeah. As perfectionist members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or within Christianity, it's like, I feel like I had let God down.
Yeah.
And then I started to get on myself like that. It's like, I remember one thing that was so raw to me on our breakdown day was like, God is disappointed in me.
Yeah.
God doesn't love me right now. He doesn't want me right now. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't even know what to do with me. I'm such a mess.
Yeah. Like, I felt very, we talked about this very similarly where I was like, God can't even use me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm useless. Like, mm-hmm. he can't even use me because I am that much of a waste of space is what I mm-hmm. felt like. I feel like we both talked about that.
Well, I just felt like I was just like, who even am I in his plan anymore? Like, I'm sure that he doesn't want me anymore.
Yeah. Like I felt like I'd ruined the plan. Mm-hmm. Like I had taken mm-hmm. all this potential and all this great stuff about me and squandered it. And I was like, I'm just taking up space living. Yeah. Yeah. And I've ruined it. Yeah.
You know, what's so funny to me, I just realized when you said I ruined the plan is like how prideful of us to think that we have that much power.
Well, perfectionism is a prideful son
it's
of a gun.
It is so prideful. Cause like, it's so ironic to think like, oh, you tiny little insignificant person in a way. Like, we're not insignificant, but in the scheme of God's plan and his power and greatness, like, I don't hold a candle to that.
That's literally like a baby mm-hmm. being like, oh, I messed up my parents' plan for me. And the parents are like, I literally have to make sure you can eat every day. Like you didn't, right. you know?
Right. And it's like, yeah. any power and light that I do have comes from God anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't come from me anyway. Yeah. It comes from him. And yeah. he was like the very thing that I feel like I had abandoned. So who am I to even think that I could ruin that?
You yeah. know? Oh, totally.
And if that's yeah. lacking, it's because I've been distancing from him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because like some, I don't even know how to say this. Like, it's because I myself am pushing away from him. It's not because he's like, I don't want you anymore.
Yeah. And even when we push away from him, his reaction, his response isn't going to be, well, then fine.
Mm-mm.
You know, like he's just like, she'll figure it out. She'll get back here.
Well, and if anything, he's like, I want you back.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you to like distance away. And I remember one story that I don't know if you guys are familiar with David Butler. I love him.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great. He was my high school seminary teacher and then a teacher at UVU for Institute. He shared a story where his son Jack went like missing for a little bit at Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
He had like run away and whatever. And David and Jenny, his wife, were like frantically searching for him everywhere. Like, Jack, where are you? Where are you? Like, they were so sad and all they could think about was getting Jack. Like, where is he? Where can I find him? They found him and David was just so like overjoyed to have his son, filled with relief and peace. And the last thought he had on his mind was, you stupid child. Like, yeah. could you imagine if he went up to his son and was like, you idiot, like just goes off on him? No, he was like so joyful.
Mm.
And I think that's how God feels about us. But for me, like I felt like the lost little Jack that was just like, my dad doesn't even want me anymore. Like he doesn't want me. Like I have drifted this far away. I've sinned. I've done this, this, and that. Like there's no way he wants me. So I'm just going to stay lost. I'm not even going to try and find him.
Yeah. Well, like it's literally like the prodigal son.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's like very similar to that story.
And he's
yeah.
like, all I want is you.
Yeah. But, and I'm like, you don't want this. Like mm-hmm. I have become the worst. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
And I think like that literally is where I was. And it's hard to like emote that right now because I obviously like don't feel that way because I'm not in a depth of depression, but I really felt that way mm-hmm. genuinely.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have felt that way, like not alone.
Yeah. And lean, if you can't believe for yourself right now that it gets better or you get better, lean on us believing that, because even though we're not totally back yet, like I mm-hmm. feel like we're still pretty struggling. It has gotten better enough that I am hopeful about it. And if I can be hopeful about myself again, you for sure as heck can be hopeful about you again. Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe it yet, lean on us believing that. You know?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I also want to say too, like, just find the thing that brings you joy and hope and light and purpose. Because for me, that's Jesus Christ and his gospel.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's not it for you, find something that does. Like, yeah. find that thing that does and that does ignite you. And that purpose and passion and peace. And for me, that's that, you know, that's what it is. So that is what brought me back. Because God is so important to me in my life and I had like abandoned him. That was another thing that solidified the I can't sustain this way of living right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of something that I had experienced on my mission that was just so, so real for me. A lot of sister missionaries struggle with weight gain on their missions. And there's so many sisters that are like, oh, like, I just don't want to, I just really need to maintain my weight. Like, I'm not going to eat X, Y, and Z. But I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to Eastern Europe, like the bakeries, the ice cream, the gelato. So I shamelessly had a chocolate croissant almost every day. I ate ice cream almost every day, even in the winters. And it was great.
As you should.
Until one P day, I put on some jeans and let me rephrase. I attempted to put on some jeans and I was like, whoa, they actually don't fit me. This is crazy. Mm. I was like, oh my gosh. And I knew I was going to like gain some weight, but I was like, you know, it's okay. It's fine. But then it started to get at me. I was like, fitness has always been a big part of my life.
Yeah.
Like playing soccer and doing all that. But then I was like, oh, this is just so new to me. I had like stretch marks on my legs, which is fine. That's like part of human life and being a woman.
And I think the important thing here is that being active physically and being fit was like a core value to you as a person. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean that if that's not a core value to you, that that's wrong, or that like if you don't really care about being active or fit, that's also not wrong. That just was like core to who you were as a person. So suddenly this person that you knew you were truly, the who you really were wasn't fitting.
Well, and it was just a new me that I had never experienced before as well. It was just uncharted territory. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get this weight thing like under control just for me, because I don't want it to just like run rampant. I don't think it's healthy for anyone to consume ice cream every single day.
Yeah.
And a chocolate croissant every day.
Yeah.
Like it's probably not super healthy. So I was like, okay, I'm going to start regulating it. But then it just, I would frequently weigh myself and it was just getting like higher and higher and higher for me. And I was like, well, it's okay. It's going to happen. But then I remember one day it was just such a big realization for me. I was like, okay, how like far am I going to let it go before I actually want to do something? Before I actually want to like change something, like a behavior. And I think this mirrored and mirrors where I'm at in my life right now. It's like, how far do I want things to go before I decide to do something differently, before it's actually going to change a behavior for me? And so then on my mission, I was like, okay, I'm going to start maybe just eating ice cream every other day. That was a compromise for me. I'm going to start running every morning. So I just started doing certain things and I wasn't perfect at it, but I just decided to do something. Like it got to a breaking point for me. And that came to my mind when Anna and I were on the phone during our breakdowns. It was like, how far am I going to let this get before I actually like want to change something?
Yes.
And sometimes that takes actual rock bottom.
Yes.
Like rock like bottom.
Misery.
Yeah. And you just having to acknowledge that you are not happy and you are not okay. Like it's okay to do something differently, to go get help, to like figure out what you need to do, because if you don't, nothing will change.
Yes, exactly. There's a quote by Tony Robbins. A lot of people have used it and heard it, but it says, change happens when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. And for me personally, like that's where I was, and we talked about this, where it like changing is gonna suck, but we had both got to the point where it was like living another day like this is worse pain than any action I'd have to take or change I'd have to make. Like we had just gotten to that point.
Absolutely. So like I can confidently say that has been like my rock bottom. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Divorce was really hard too. That was really hard. But it was rock bottom in a different way, especially just in terms of like identity. Like, who are you? Who am I? And the holistic psychologist, I think she also posted recently that like a healing you is a... What did she say? She basically just said you can never try and get back to an old you because you will never be there again, ever.
Yeah.
So here Anna and I are trying to get back to our perfectionist selves.
So that, like, hard. Yeah.
We're serving us so well, but that won't work. So we're having to figure out how to embrace like these horrible stages, it feels like. But maybe they're not all that horrible. Maybe it's just embracing dark parts of ourselves that we've historically shamed.
Yes.
Or we've historically just run away from or not embraced or acknowledged. But now we got to do that because what we've been doing in the past does not work.
Yeah. And the perfectionist selves that were serving us weren't really serving us. They were, you know, painting us as shiny as we wanted them to. Like it wasn't like, oh, we're trying to get back to this perfectionist mindset or way of living because that's what like was serving us the best. It wasn't really serving us. It gave us those like benchmarks to keep hitting, to keep feeling good about ourselves. But like you said, the like dark parts of ourselves and parts of us that were just as real as this high achieving, striving for excellence part of ourselves was just getting so neglected and so abandoned. And so then I feel like it just kind of was like a screaming toddler, you know, who like is just throwing a tantrum until it gets paid attention to. And finally, it was just screaming so loud that I was like, okay, like I'll take care of you, even though you're so annoying. Like, even though I don't like want to right now, like I have to take care of you because it's getting to that point.
Well, and I think in life, like we will continue to get served the same problem and the same issue again and again and again until you learn to do something differently, or you learn from that experience, if that makes sense. And until you learn something from that, like you will continue to hit that wall.
Yeah.
So the wall for me of like, oh, nothing's wrong with you, and you don't have to like acknowledge your dark sides, or you don't have to admit that you are depressed sometimes, even if you are called sunshine, you can still be dark. Like, mm-hmm. you can still have cloudy days. But historically, it's like, no, you can't. No, you can't. But now I'm finally having to learn that lesson where it's like, no, actually, I'm having a really crappy day. Like, yeah. I've had some bad days. But that makes me, like, relatable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes us able to connect.
Yeah.
And something interesting that I realized with the conversation with Anna when we were in this, like, super dark point is, like, I felt so connected to you.
Yeah.
And you said some really awesome things that I literally had to type out and say, like, Anna needs to say this again. Like, that was good. Mm-hmm. And that was in our most, like, raw and vulnerable moments where you weren't being scripted. Like,
yeah.
you were not on stage.
Yeah.
You were, like, backstage crying a mess, mascara streaming down the face.
Literally.
And yeah. you said something so insightful. Mm-hmm. And we connected on a human level. Like, it was so good. And mm-hmm. it was so beautiful. And now I can say, like, when a friend approaches me, dude, I think I'm at rock bottom. Like, I'm feeling XYZ. I can just say, same.
You're like, nux, dude.
Like, hey, I've totally been there. Like, yeah. tell me about it.
Yeah. Totally. And, like, I think, because, like you said, your wall was, like, that you kept hitting was like, oh, nothing's wrong. Like, I'm okay. Nothing's wrong. I think similarly, my wall I kept hitting was like, every time I got like rejected or something didn't work out, it was like, okay, then we'll just work on the parts that we've worked on. Like, we'll just start showcasing those and we'll just ignore the other parts of ourselves. It's like how you were ignoring that something was wrong. Mm-hmm. I was like knowing something was wrong, but was ignoring it to like
yeah.
shiny up the other parts of myself. So even what you said when you were like, oh, when I first met you, meaning me, it was like mm-hmm. hard to connect with me. That was on purpose, because anytime I'd really made like a connection with someone before then, it turned out horribly for me. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like, and so exactly what you were saying, it's just been cool to see that journey of like you hitting your wall of nothing's wrong, nothing's wrong. Me hitting my wall of like, oh, rejected, focus on what's right. Focus on what's right. And us not being able to connect. Now over the years, we're literally crying in your bedroom together. Mm-hmm. And like holding these dark parts of ourselves. As like hippy dippy as that sounds, but like honestly.
No, it's true. It really is true. And it makes me like honestly kind of grateful and excited for my capacity for connection moving forward.
Ooh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that.
Like we will now be like we just have a wider range of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you claim to be perfect, like you only can relate to this much, and it's the other people that are perfect.
Yeah.
Which is no one.
And you can't connect to perfect.
No.
Yeah.
Are there any other thoughts that you've had?
Guys, I think that's it.
You guys, I so wish that we had it like,
oh man, that'll just have to be, you know what that's gonna have to be? That's just gonna have to be a heaven replay moment. We all get mm-hmm. up there. Alicia and I are gonna get everyone some popcorn. We're gonna set you down in the clouds. And we're gonna say we're gonna replay.
We're gonna replay
when we recorded that. You guys can watch it.
That is it for today, though.
Yes.
And we'll continue to think of like any other things we drew from that conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm sure we're gonna have plenty of other moments where we have like weakness and vulnerability, of course, because that's mm-hmm. what makes us human. We're not like machines, and we'll be sure to share those moments with you all. And we hope that you share your moments with us. Or just a trusted loved one and see what connection it brings.
Yeah.
Do you have any takeaways?
Takeaways. Let me think. I'd say just for me personally, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give a takeaway, but I'm going to give it to the me that was in that pit.
Okay.
That was Ooh. In the rock bottom.
Okay. I like it.
We're only like 1 inch out of the pit, but.
But you're out of it.
But I'm out of it a little bit. I have like one hand on the ledge. Fingertips are out of
Heck
the
yeah.
pit.
Heck yeah.
I would say, and this isn't, I'm just going to say what I'm thinking, so it's not going to be as straightforward and direct as most of our takeaways, but, I would just say that hitting rock bottom, hitting moments like that, it's not as permanent as it feels. It's not as significant as it feels, and it's not as long-term damaging as it feels.
Mm-hmm.
That's just another part of perfectionism where you feel like everything is the end, like genuinely, like everything is terminal, everything how it is now is how it's going to be forever, it will never get better, which also is part of depression too, but just that it's not like, just don't take it so seriously, I guess is what I mean. Don't take yourself mm-hmm. so seriously, don't take the situation so seriously, like it's gonna be okay. And I hate that when people say that to me, but like it'll get better.
I'm trying to think of my takeaway, but I was just listening to you.
I can just keep singing. Take a wait.
Oh, that did it. Just wait. Okay.
Start rapping.
The remix.
Take a wait. Get it.
I think it's something that Brené Brown has said far more eloquently, but basically, like, running from the dark parts of yourself is far more tiring than actually, like, turning to it and learning to embrace it. So eventually it will catch up to you, and, like, when it does, it is going to be difficult and hard. So it's just easier to embrace those things and use them as parts of you to be more relatable and to be human.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that. No,
I like that. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I was trying to think of, I swear there's another one. I don't know how to say this, but, like, there's always something that you can do. There's always something that you can do to get out of the situation that you're in. And sometimes the best thing you can do is to just sit there and, like, cry about it, or to call a friend or something. But, like, there's always a next step. There's always a next choice. There's always a next decision to be made. And eventually, like, it will, like you just said, like, it will get better. But when you're in that pit, it's just character development. It's just the plot. It's just
the plot,
I'm just kidding.
Baby.
I hate that I just said that.
I love that you just said that.
Oh, I guess, like, one thing that I feel like this is pretty, like, typical to say, but I love character development in, like, shows and movies. I live for character development.
Okay, yeah.
And the dark, deep pits, like, those moments, it's just building your character.
Yeah.
It's just building your life and your personality and your story.
The hero's arc. Yes.
The hero's arc. Mine's more like the wave.
The hero's
The arc. Hero's arc. But anyway, that's all that I had. I think take away whatever the crap you want to from this episode.
Yeah.
And just let us know what you think.
Just, like, leave us a review, maybe, if you want to.
Yeah.
Or, like, rate.
Just a rate.
Just a little rating, perchance.
Yeah.
My name's Anna.
My name's Alicia.
And this is Popping Perfectionism.
Mine was terrible.
That's okay.
Oh my gosh.
It's the lip gloss.
I'm broken.